Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode. So click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by Sendit Philippines. Sendit is the leading payment gateway in the Philippines. Allow your business to accept payments seamlessly from cards, e-wallets, retail outlets, and local banks. For more information, visit sendit.co. Also powered by PDAX. PDAX is a homegrown cryptocurrency exchange that offers the best rates among local cryptocurrency exchanges. Download the PDAX app now on the Google Play Store, App Store, or Huawei App Gallery. Start trading Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other cryptocurrencies for as low as 50 pesos by signing up on podlink.co/hustleshare PDAX. Also by Podmetrics, the easiest way to monetize your podcast. Sign up now at podmetrics.co for free and use the code HustleShare.
I think that for me, you need to learn how to say no, and at the same time, you really have to be firm with your decision for the sake of the company. You have to forget the other aspect. You have to separate your personal life to personal decisions, and don't combine it from
Welcome to Hustle Share, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here's your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Hustle Share podcast. We are back. And again, it's been a while since it last recorded. If you've been listening to the last couple of episodes, that was pretty dope because those were recorded a couple of weeks back. And just for context, if you're listening to the show on the first time, I'm also a startup founder and I'm in the middle of a fundraising round. And when you're doing that, it's so crazy. But before that, let's talk about someone who successfully raised $1 million already. Okay, for a startup. And I said it to a fault that I haven't heard of you guys, but you've raised $1 million and proudly representing the Philippines. So before I get carried away, let's welcome Mr. Felix Ike of Comunidad. Welcome to the show, Felix.
Thanks. Thanks, Ron. Thanks for having me.
And again, thanks very much. And sorry if I haven't heard of you. It's just that when you're, I'm pretty sure you know this. When you're fundraising, everything else is secondary, right? Because this is runway, right? When you're, yes. When you're, it never gets old too. It's the craziest part of any startup founder, especially if you're a CEO. But I want to understand your journey. But before I ask your journey, I need to ask you the million-dollar question. Blix, what's your hustle?
Yeah. So about the hustle, actually, well, I think all my life I've been, you know, like I've been hustling. So even before I actually started to work, you know, like an employee and, you know, a lot of stuff. So, but eventually through experience, I was able to learn a lot of hustles, like, you know. So I was doing a lot of, actually, there are two things. So more on tech. That's my hustle. And then the second one is I love camping. That's why.
Camping.
Yeah, so, yeah, so yeah, so I divide those two stuff. Like Monday to Friday, I hustle tech. And then weekends, I hustle outdoors. So that's what I do. I mean, that's what I do now. That's what I do now. But before, I hustle, yeah, the same as almost everyone. Like every day, 9 to 5, commute, you know, working.
Yep.
Just learning things, you know.
No, that's good. Again, and that's what's important as a startup founder, is that we have balance, right? Because this thing can drive you nuts.
Yeah.
Easily.
I agree.
And you need to find a way to find that that sanity back, just for a few hours at least, just to remind you of what matters the most. Because again, as founders, or again, as being CEO, you eat last. You prioritize yourself the least in the grand scheme of things. But again, you got to give yourself time to still be able to focus and nurture yourself in order to be able to serve, right?
I agree.
Absolutely. And now I need to ask you to buckle up, because if you like the outdoors and you like camping, we have a time machine here, because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. Boom. Now we are back in the camping grounds. All right. We are in the camping grounds, and I need you to paint us a picture of what Felix was. Because one thing that's interesting, I'm stalking your LinkedIn right now, is you came from the great Bicol region.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So, and I have a theory of why comunidad, again, just for context, for those people who don't understand what comunidad is yet, it is, or how would you define comunidad, Felix?
Well, definitely it means it means community, actually, since most of our work is being done with impact to the people. So we name it, you know, comunidad. Mm-hmm. It's more of, we just mixed, actually, what do you call this? Like community, and in a way it can be global. So with a mix of still the Filipino you know, like culture. So yeah, it's basically community. Means community.
Oh, but in to be very specific on the problem you're trying to solve, what are you guys working on?
Yeah, so the main thing that we're working on is we're in tech, but we're really focused on weather and environmental intelligence.
So, weather and environmental. So that's very interesting, and that's why I was like very. That's why.
As you mentioned, you know, we're really on the back end of things. We're not really like you know, these apps that you see, like, you know, like a lot of people. So we're mostly on the back end, and we're actually used by mostly on the back end of government, of private companies. So that's why, you know, we really focus on the business. You know, the secondary, the fundraising, it's all like, you know, the PR, they're all just, you know, secondary.
Of course.
But we're not in that like, you know, in space. That consumer space. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're still just in, what do you call this?
No, but the impact and the problem you're trying to solve affects us all, right? At the end of the day, we know how messed up the world is, and how it looks like the tipping point is just a matter of years or months.
Because, you know, Ron, you know, I came from Legazpi City, so that's where I grew up. That's where I studied also. So I'm not from Metro Manila, and I, you know, our culture in Bicol is different. Of course, it's more like, you know, provincia type, and and, you know, coming here to Manila, you know, we're just here to work. You know, we don't even have any, like, you know, like anything else. We need to work to support our family, of course, but. you know, knowing Bicol is one of the disaster prone areas in the
yes.
country.
Yes, typhoon belt.
Yeah, typhoon, volcano eruptions, earthquake, yep. whatever, you know, name it. So it's more of a, that's where the action happens. So when we were growing up, you know, it's natural. I mean, it's natural. And why not use it when you know, when I had a lot of experience with these stuff, you know, why not use it to also apply it globally, right? Since we have the expertise exactly. naturally. So in other countries, they, you know, they just look at it at like there's a weather. But here in the Philippines, the impact in the communities is really, you know, that they affect. Like there's evacuation centers, there's 4 months of brownout, and right. you know, a lot of stuff. It's the effect is really, especially climate change now.
Yeah,
it's you know, the impact of that will be you know, worse in the next few years. So that's actually the foundation of it. You know, we came from a place where there's a lot of it. So what we did was we just what do you call this? Enhance it and made use of all the data, then apply it globally. So I think it's a good stuff that most Filipinos, they're actually copying what other countries are doing. But for us, the style that we did is, you know, what is our expertise in terms of, you know, the real things that are happening. What we did was, you know, what do you call this? So we feel that we are the best in these.
Absolutely. Areas. Yeah.
So that's why it's, you know, we are confident to compete globally. And we're not afraid to, you know, to face competition like, you know, these bigger companies. So yeah, that's how we call it in Bicol, Uragon. So we feel that we can compete. Most Bicolanos are very competitive. We're bringing that on a global scene.
Oh, and that's amazing. And that's what I want to understand. So again, one thing that I see here is that you've seen disasters in the thick of it, right? So whether it's volcanoes and with Mount Mayon, whether it's the typhoons, that there's 20, at least 20 of them that hit us every year. And again, first dibs, it's either Bicol region. My roots are from Northern Samar, so we're not that far.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's just under, Matnog, right? You just have to cross.
Yeah, Matnog. Yeah.
So that's, I totally understand because I see my family like in my yard when it gets ravaged, they get hurt. Imagine the first landfall of a tornado, not a tornado, that typhoon hits. That's the hardest one. But now I want to understand first. So you mentioned that the roots is from Legazpi Albay, correct?
Yeah.
I want to understand from a point of view of a data driven guy, or at least being an entrepreneur. What was the mindset like? Because one thing also from friends that I've seen got born and raised in the province, I've seen this, and again, I'm not generalizing. I've just seen this in a lot of people. Two things. First off, they have a chip on their shoulder. They will out-hustle you, and they'll prove you wrong. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes there's also this inferiority complex that, I'm taga provincia lang, whatever, right? So how did you get over that, and how did you nurture that competency that if you had that pride of an Uragon and said, nah, I can do it, I can be world class, back when you were still in Legazpi at Albay, how did you nurture that mindset and then that desire?
Well, to be honest, Ron, you know, when I was there in Bicol, I didn't have any sense of entrepreneurship or even business. You know, I just hang out with my friends. You know, we had a band, and you know, we it's more just, you know, I haven't been exposed to any of these. So, but along the way, you know, through experience, so it's like that. You know, these things just come to you, and then you take the opportunity. Then you realize that there's a lot of things also like in your past, in your community, that needs help in terms of these things. But the challenges now is mostly because we're always asked, you know, what's our difference with PAGASA, with FIVOX, you know, with government agencies. So that's actually the everyday question that they ask from us.
Okay.
And Well, because the world now is evolving, actually, right? I mean, in the future, I'm not saying that we don't need PAGASA or we don't need Feebox, because you know they are really doing a great job. But eventually, it's gonna be automatic, right? You know, you don't have to wait for the news, right? You know, I mean,
you get the MDRMC alert that scares the hell out of you.
yeah. So.
I love it, but my God, it makes you panic.
And then mostly Filipinos are just concerned about typhoons, but on a daily basis, like for example, if you compare airport operations, right? You know, the airports, they are very precise. Like if there's lightning and thunderstorms, the plane won't go down yet, won't land yet, and then they have to wait like 30 minutes up in the air before they go down. That's how they, precise they are with the weather, right?
Right.
As you can see, like, you know, the governments and businesses also have the access to the same data, right? But why are not they using it on a daily basis, right?
Wow.
So mostly my talks actually are showing everyone that we have access to data. You know, the Philippines is rich in data, but the way we use it is actually very traditional. It's like, as you can see in the Facebook, you see a PDF file, right? You know, like a PDF file, like, or a picture of a typhoon. But
yeah.
You know, we're used to like looking at typhoon as where is the typhoon now, but we're not used to looking at it. What's the impact in my house?
Correct.
So if you know, if you have a business, like if you have let's say a bank, you have 1,000 branches. Mm-hmm. You know, if you see a typhoon, the reports should look like, you know, 1,000 impact reports in an automated way.
Right.
What's the impact in your location, not the impact in the country? Like, I mean, of course, you are concerned in your location with your in Comunidad. That's what we do, actually. We, you know, we use PAGASA data, we use, you know, but it's more like the approach, you know, how do you see risks? But I think now there's a lot of challenges in terms of what you call this, explaining it mostly to the people. But the point is, you know, we're using that data to really help a lot of communities. I think most people don't know that, you know, we have the biggest clients here in the Philippines doing that already. So we're in the back end. We're at the back end. What do you call this? we're doing it in airports. We're doing it in bigger LGUs.
Nice.
So here's also one thing I learned. As you mentioned, like as a Bicolano, we actually didn't. Now it's not about your Bicolano you came from. When you're doing startup, actually, it's more about the revenue already. Like, I mean, it's more about numbers. So I'm telling my people that you know the secondary is the, you know, the things that you do with startup fundraising, but you don't need to forget that you're still doing business. You know, you need to have clients. They need to pay you. So that's the most important part. Regardless of your inferiority complex or whatever, but you have to have clients. You know, when I started, actually, well, I was invited, actually. Here's one thing that I wanted to share. So I was invited in Bicol, actually, for like a startup weekend, because they are also promoting the Bicolano startups. I have nothing like bad to say to them, but what I mean is when I was talking, actually, most of the startups are in a way idealistic. Like, I have a good product, right? I have a good product, then I have something like that, but they forgot actually to sell the product.
Right.
Like, I mean, so that's what I'm telling everyone, that, you know, when you are doing fundraising, when you're doing a lot of stuff, it all boils down to, like, you know, do you have clients? Like, you know, do you have it's really you know, it's really just, you know, go get to your grind, just work.
Absolutely. Okay, now I want to zero in before you again. If the your previous job or your setting in Albay, and again, this is what you have now, and you completely detailed it in a great way. I want to bridge that out in the middle, and understand how you built that career and that expertise, because if you understood the problem, and this is the product that you have now, and how you're basically operating it in a way, I want to understand again what were the first hustles you did, and what are the things you learned? Because this is a highly specialized startup.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So
right, how did you get in here?
Yeah, it's even hard to hire people, you know, with that mix of experience. So it's always a challenge for us. But yeah,
you have to build them up. Yeah.
For me, I'm not saying I got lucky, but I am thankful for the mentors that I had in the past. So I started actually working. It's like the real serious work because yeah. I also had a lot of shitty jobs. Like I worked in email support. I work in a call center.
We gotta be proud of that. That teaches us something, right?
Yeah. So
I did that too.
I work 3 shifts. Like every 2 weeks, they change shift from 9 to 5. And then they terminate you after the 3 month contracts. You know that during I think 15 years ago they do that like every 3 months, 3 months.
Yep.
Then you don't have a job for 3 months. Then but that was like, you know, that was a real hustle for me. But after that, you know, I started applying for a job and then got to IT. My boss before was his name is John Orok. So John Orok is
John, what's up? Shout out, John.
John, yeah. It's my boss, and then John's team was like full of you know, all the top IT people here in the Philippines.
Barhead.
When I was just you know, working with them, I didn't really know what I was doing. But by observing them, you know, I got to witness how these people work.
Right.
And but eventually, I got, you know, I improved my skills in IT and all those stuff. Then after that, I transitioned. Because during the time in the IT industry, so was my position already, what do you call this? I was in the management position because of the hard work. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I transitioned to a European firm that handles weather. That was the transition. So I came from a heavy IT startup. We do platform development. We do, you know, all hardcore stuff.
Yep.
To that. So that transition, the mix of that, that's where I am now. Mm-hmm. And I was able to mix the past experience from the present experience and made a startup. So I think I'm telling my employees that, you know, they think I'm just this cool guy, you know, but I have like a lot of experience in terms of, you know, these things. So my job before in when I was working with these European firms, I actually worked with New Zealand government too. Yung pag-asa na New Zealand, so I worked there for years. So I was handling Asia in management and technical position. Then, but all of these, like, you know, the whole traveling. So you work in Asia and then you travel all around. Then you got to know everyone. That's why I decided to build Comunidad, because I think I witnessed the other countries that, hey, you know, Philippines is much more worse, and we have more experience than you guys. Then, as you can see, I'm the only Filipino in conferences abroad with these kinds of things. You know, well, some of the guys from Pag-asa, I sometimes, but usually in most conferences, you know, it's very rare for Philippines to explore in these areas. So that's what happened. It's just a mix of my previous work and. I decided to be an entrepreneur. So, you know, decided to be an entrepreneur, not because I love to be an entrepreneur, because, you know, I need to earn money, you know.
There you go.
I need to earn money. So I want to earn money in my own way, and then in a creative way. Like, I mean, I still feel that in a startup, it's still, you know, you still need to be really creative.
No, that's absolutely, because you're creating something that's out of the norm. But all right, let's take our first break. And when we come back, I want to understand further what made you jump and how that experience was like and how you completely built Comunidad all the way to how you raise $1 million to get that done. Let's talk about that more after the break.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate their growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back from the break. We are still with Felix Aike, again, who was then told us how he built his own startup based on the experiences that he's had prior. And that's, I think, a common theme to a lot of us founders, that, you know what, a lot of, we pick up little things along the way of problems that we think we can solve ourselves, that are inside out, that, again, we pick up from the jobs that we've had. But I want to understand, so weather or crisis management and technology, that's not the initial thought in my head when I heard this, like, shit, that's going to be super fucking expensive.
Yeah.
Right? Because this is hardcore stuff that affects millions of lives, and you're trying to solve this problem. And I want to zero in on the problem first. Of all the problems you tried to solve, because you've seen the John Oryks do it, and again, that guy's amazing in terms of solving, making money in deep tech, whatever form or fashion. I've seen how many exits has he had? 3, 4, right? And he's also paying it forward to other founders and mentoring them. It's amazing. I've worked with him, by the way, before. I stayed in his office for a while when my first in okay. Jupiter.
Yeah.
I think I've met you. That's wow. Besides sweet ecstasy, but all right, going back. This problem is a very legit problem, but why this problem of all things that you could have done? If the objective was to earn money and earn money creatively.
Yeah. Well, because of, as mentioned, the past experience, actually, it's more like we've seen the opportunity in terms of, making a good business. But at the same time, along the way, you know, the effect of you're really helping people. So that came along and then balanced everything. So it's like even our employees, they like working in this company because it has balance of both a business and then at the same time social impact. Yeah. And then especially now there's environmental social governance where, you know, there's a lot of things that you need to consider in terms of climate change. As you mentioned, these are not just data that you can publish online. Like, these are risk data. Let's say if you got wrong, if you got incorrect data, you know, the risks are very high.
People can die.
Of course, this is our craft. That's why businesses are paying us. And I think along the way we got to a point that you know, we really love. At the start, it was a challenge. As you mentioned, what are the challenges that I encountered? So first, I didn't have a company. Actually, I was using my friend's company. I was selling to BPOs.
Oh, wow.
This is process outsourcing. So, and then after that, I built a company. Then I got wrong partners, right? The lesson that I'm want to say to everyone, you know, be careful with partnering with your friends. I'm saying that, you know, it's good friends, but in terms of, you know,
business,
it's, you know, there's always something could go wrong. In terms of me, because I did not have any MBA, so I didn't know how to navigate through the business area, because I was just a tech person. So it was hard for me to understand that. I mean, I had a lot of bad decisions, changes in the company until, you know, I navigated it, experience it properly, experience it the way that I learned from my mistakes.
Yeah.
So I think for me, it's more of just the admin stuff, but the technical stuff it became so natural to us, to me and also to my, but more on how to set it up. I think in the Philippines, it's very hard, but I'm happy where we're at now. As mentioned, Ron. So if you know me personally, I don't really look like a founder, you know, like
neither do I.
I mean, I just work, you know, like the business, and I know that our product is good. We help a lot of people, we help a lot of business, then we just do those stuff.
Yeah. But I want to zero in on the struggles. So again, most founders that decide to create a startup have several levels of expertise on a certain field, whether it's technical, business, and whatnot. But you're the CEO, and you're coming from a tech background, and you said you struggled on the other sides. I want to know exactly what those struggles were and how you actually overcame them, because a lot of the founders that listen to this podcast are probably in the same boat. Like, I'm either good in tech or I'm good in business. I don't know shit about tech, or a mixture of both, right? But there's levels of expertise there. How did you overcome? Like, you know, you said you made the wrong co-founder decisions. But what really defines a good founder also is their ability to bounce back from wrong moves. And I want to understand how you did that.
You're right, actually, bouncing back from failures. But I think the thing is mostly what motivates you actually in doing this. So I think it's not more of mostly on the product, on the side, but it's more of a personality, you know?
Yeah.
So there are people I know that it's really like working, really like their grind is like, for me, I was saying like, you know, I cannot do that. You know, like, I mean, it's too much. Like, I mean, there's a lot of people who are really motivated, and then they really want it bad. You know, I think if you can see most founders, they really want it bad. You know, I have to do this regardless of what the challenge is. For example, most founders, I think, you know, when we talk with each other, like personally, we are very open to, you know, financials. Like, you know, I think that's the number one challenge for startups is, you know, for me, we took the risk. Like, you know, I hired a lot of people. I invested a lot of business. So, you know, I really didn't care about the money that, that I bootstrapped, right? You know, so at first I got excited, right? Okay, yeah, you know. And the good thing about having a lot of friends and having it's like trying to be a very good, better person.
Yeah.
You can bootstrap easily, right? Like people trust you. Like for me, when I was in college, I can bootstrap, you know, like I can bootstrap and having organize a party, like, you know, I use that, skills that, you know, so, but the problem there is, I've got the wrong decision. How are you going to be paid back? And then there are cases that you have 6 months without money.
Oh, shit.
Like something like that. So, especially during the pandemic, right? So most projects are, like cut off and something, but as a founder, how will you manage that? So I'm telling, some of the people that ask me, like, it's not just about the product, you know, it's the financials are really crazy. The cash flow, that's why, you know, it's good to have funding, But it's along that way, it's very hard to manage cash flow. Yep. I think that's the first one for us as a because if you don't hire good teams, good people, you cannot do it by yourself.
Yes.
So you also have to invest in great people, and then you have to pay them also great money.
They don't come cheap.
Yeah, they don't come cheap. You also have to pay great IT developers to help you. Like, you know, for me, I was the one who developed the first version, but the second, third version, I can no longer do it.
Yep.
So, yeah, like, and then and then these types of things, and then suddenly, and then you have to find clients, you have to do sales. It's like you know, how bad do you want it? You know, because I think most founders are also thinking that, you know, what if I give up now? Like, I mean, I can no longer do this. This is really like crazy. So, but every day when you wake up, you still wanna, you know, you still wanna do it. Like, you know,
yep.
If you have that mindset, I think, and then also you need to also to listen to other people. Like, hey, what you're doing is, I mean, advice from people, because for me, the good thing about the network I have also is globally is, you know, I schedule a call with others and then I ask them for help. Like, what do you think this feature would, you know, the impact of this feature of the system? What about the pricing? How do I reach out to these people? So, you know, in short, in Filipino, it's like, dapat makapal yung mukha mo talaga.
I mean, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I had a teammate before who doesn't want to bootstrap money because like he thinks that bootstrapping money will affect his social status, right? I mean, like for example, like in a Filipino, pag nangutang ka, it means wala kang pera, right?
No.
That's what they think. But in as an entrepreneur, you know, it's you know,
that's the only way you'll scale.
Yeah, that's the only way you'll scale. So
yeah.
So like I said, you don't need to be afraid. You have to take the risk. I mean, in summary, you have to take the risk, and so along the way, you're gonna get excited with those risks. You know, it's like playing I don't know, it's like casino or something. I'm not playing casino, but it's like, you know, you're playing a game. So
yeah. No, you bet on yourself. That's it. And your ability to you know, build a team around it. Now I want to focus on product. So you said you built it, and I want to zero in on these data points, because again, if that data is readily available to everybody, how come nobody's doing it? And what exactly did you guys build and productize that it becomes something that you can, you know, sell to a lot of people?
Yeah. So yeah, as you can see, the world now, actually, there's a lot of improvements, right? There's a lot of data, there's AI, there's, you know, there's a lot more. So in terms of operating it, for example, a power plant operating, you know, like a hydropower plant or an airport, actually, they make use of paid data. So they pay for the data, right? Because those data are high quality.
Okay.
But of course, in the Philippines, no one buys data because they think it's cost, right? But in Europe, in US, that's already part of their daily life. And they,
right.
if the data is good, then they will pay, like, you know, millions of like dollars for that data. So because it helps them in terms of efficiency, operations, and so on. So what we did is government data is also available here in the Philippines, but you cannot extract it, right?
Mm.
It's like you have to look at their website. You have to look at their website. So if you go to a local government, you see like hundreds of screens, right? You see like, wow, command center. So you see hundreds of screens. These are a lot from every website, but it doesn't really tell you the impact of in a barangay. So what we do is actually we extract data. In a way, we invest in data. That's what we do. So we collect data. So we buy from the best data suppliers. One of our partners is like tomorrow.io, who is now putting satellites for weather. So micro satellites. IBM, the weather company, is also a partner. Mm-hmm. So these are bigger global companies. And then we pay millions of pesos, you know, for that. That's our business. But the way we deliver it to customers, that's actually the value of what we did. So what we did is I think it's really like complex to explain, because the way they use environmental information for government is different. For government, it's just safety of people. Actually, we just have these Viber SMS alerts where I'll tell you a cool thing. So, for example, there's a lightning strike, right? So, if there's a lightning strike, so there are two types of lightning strikes. There's cloud to ground. That's the one who is just in the clouds. It's called
The ones that just light up the sky and never hits anything.
Yeah, yeah. So, but those two things will result to a lot of things. Heavy rain. So if you're in a hazard area, a flooded area, like for example, if you're in UST, España, so even
shout out, that is my alma mater, so I know that very well. Mm-hmm. It will flood.
Yeah, but you know, this data is available, right? So what happens to that data is what we do is, for example, if you have 50 barangays, if there's a lightning strike near that barangay, it will be alerted in real time. And it will tell you like in an hour before, like there will be the risks of flood. So it's real time now. It's that data you can use for other, not typhoon. This is on a daily basis.
Wow.
That data is already available. And then actually I'm always in, when I am speaking with other, in other events, why are communities not using this data? And it's used by NAIA. It's used by NAIA, it's used by airports, but why don't we use it? Like, you know, because of the understanding of a data-driven approach, right? You know, we are still used to looking at the website, looking at PAGASA. That data is coming from PAGASA anyway. You know, that data is coming. Why not automate it? Just like we have these Viber alerts, just send it to the you know, people receive SMS and Viber alerts, regardless of where they are in the
So, and make it proactive, because again, a lot of what we do now, it's either like, shoot, it's too late.
Yeah.
The thing is here, we couldn't prevent it from happening. If you said that data is available all along, right? We should have the ability to really make that proactive. And I think that's what you're doing. But again, I'm pretty sure there is a point here where you have to really remove status quo and bad habits before that. And how did you overcome those things and make this product again something that's digestible? Because I'm pretty sure a lot of the things that want to stay in the status quo movement would be like, yeah, we have that naman, we don't need it. How do you break those barriers?
It's a good question, because that's really a challenge for us. The example I gave to you earlier, so as you can see, it's gonna be like it makes it super efficient. It makes it, you know, for example, if the NDRMC sends you a heavy rain alert, but it's already over, right?
It's already flooding. Like, thank you, I see the flood, I appreciate it.
In our system, it's a few hours before it tells you on a barangay level, right? So for example, if barangay one will flood, potential for flooding, it tells you the potential for, but the barangay five will not receive the alerts. So that's how it's efficient. But the challenge is mostly on, of course, the existing systems, and then the education also in terms of, because as Filipinos, regardless of a typhoon, we don't really care. You know, I mean, let it hit. Like, you know, let the people evacuate, and after that, let's just handle the
situation. Aftermath. Yeah.
But because we're used to the past, but climate change is real, and then it becomes so like, you know, uncertain.
Yep.
And sometimes these decision support tools will really help save lives and also save assets and business. And but when you explain this to the normal status quo, it's really hard to digest. I mean, for us, Europe and US, actually, they are doing this already, like for the past how many years, you know?
Yep. Tornadoes, whatever that that's out
but
there, right?
Yeah. For them, because for them, there's seasons. So it's really very easy to manage. In Asia, it's different because we have a lot of disturbances. And when you explain this actually to local government, they always say that, you know, there's a free website actually. it's like I'm telling them, if you're in airport operations, you don't look at free websites, right? You know?
Yeah. There's lives on the line. What are you talking about, right?
So if we can have that same level of approach to for safety, that's why I always say an example for airports. if you have that mentality to approach the public like, you know, like passengers of an airplane,
yeah,
that would be great. I mean, the data is there. So the acceptability is very challenging. That's why for us as startups, it's part of the challenges. That's why we put budget in education, we put budget in marketing, mm-hmm. and you know, but the real aspect of that is you know, the problem that we need to be solved to the customer. For governments, it's safety. Mm-hmm. You know, for energy companies, is different. It's more of trading market, safety mm-hmm. too. Mining different. You know, when you're in the boat, it's different. So every what do you call this? Industry is different. So yeah. Actually, it's a funny thing because when you know, people from the National Weather Service, actually, of course, they're focused on safety, but there's a lot of ways you can also use these data on a daily mm-hmm. basis. And at Comunidad, we are like here's an example. Like the traditional ones, like Pag-asa, they are like more of the Gen Xers, and we are the Gen Z.
The TikTok one. That you're the TikTokers. Okay.
We are the TikToker of
of data science, technically for crisis management. I mean, climate management. Right. Now, I want to understand from this point on. So that was a challenge. How did you get your first few clients? Is it part of your network? Is it part of pure hustle? Because again, if there's status quo, you got to break. That's hard to break sometimes. Yeah. Especially in government sometimes. You know, they like to stay at a status quo. I've seen government agencies still running Windows XP. What the fuck? Right.
Yeah.
how do you break that cycle?
Yeah, they're always actually people are also asking me, some of my friends from the industry, that, you know, how did I get a lot of government customers? Comunidad actually has government customers in India and in the Philippines. So wow. We have a lot of government customers, and we have also the conglomerates like Aboitiz, Peralco. I mean, and a lot more. So we have those are our customers. And but the first ones I had was like, you know, business process outsourcing companies.
BPOs, yes. Okay.
So, you know, I was trying to actually I started from sending tropical cyclone reports, only just you know, like by Baguio before it hits Philippines. You know, they get a report, so they rearrange their workforce. But how can I capture them? You know, so I did the classic way, like, you know, cold calls, email. So I mean. That didn't work. Actually, he said, you know, stop emailing me. Like, you know, what's this? You know, like something like that. Find a way to reach out to them. So
right.
What I did is I sponsored, you know, I but you know, like the thing that you said, you have to invest first before you
right.
can. So I invested to reach out to the customers because I didn't have any way. I didn't have that network. So I participated in events, actually. I sponsored events and then we put education, like, hey, these data can help you, and we give them free demos.
Nice.
And then suddenly I you know, that campaign, actually it's not just one campaign, it was five campaigns that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, you know, I got a few customers and I was happy, like, you know, like even they don't pay that much, but at least, you know,
yeah, it's something. Right.
And then along the way it evolved to something bigger because my clients was all located in BGC.
Mm.
Right. So, and then Taguig noticed it. So that's the first client is Taguig City. I'm in government. But yes, dealing with this stuff, it's very tedious. Not just for the regulatory, for the compliance, but you know, convincing them. Not really convincing them, but making them realize that it's important. Mm-hmm. And then after that, well, once I got that, you know, I got motivated too much. So my hustle like times 100. So like nice. I saw the opportunity, I saw the potential, then okay, let's work. I hired people, and then, you know, those, but the very first ones, it's very difficult because it took me a year actually to get a client because I didn't know how to approach them. I'm like, who would buy weather data?
Right.
Like you know, these kinds of things. But in if you're in other markets, it's very easy to sell. But in the Philippines, it's very hard.
They're the perfect market, but they're the hardest to sell to because, again, status quo and old bad habits. But before we take our last break, you got that down pat. You have the product. You have a little bit of things. How did you start growing the team? Because a lot of these early hustles was all you. Yeah. What was that composition of the team? And if you had mistakes on the co-founder levels and, you know, people that you went business to, how did you get the right team in place?
Yeah, especially in our field, actually it's very difficult because there's only a few people who are in this field, especially in the Philippines. So during my past work, I met a few people who at that time I feel like, you know, this guy has a great potential, but I don't have money to offer. So, but the actually I'm happy that my team is now composed of people from UP in meteorology, people from RTU, Rizal Technical University, data science and astronomy.
Wow, so, there's a course in RTU there. Wow, it's amazing. Yeah.
And then I'm happy that I'm also giving them, you know, like full time jobs. You know, their salaries are much more bigger than in government. I'm not saying like
absolutely,
but I think I mean. During that time, I hired actually some people, but it didn't work because the expertise actually is it doesn't fit. So now I was able to meet these guys from UP, from RTU. So they are in academe area where they really know what they're doing. But so what I did was, you know, I hired them and then. And I used to have a team abroad globally. So I have when I was working in this US company, so we have people in Africa, in South America, in India. So we have this for 3 years. We have these friendships like global. We go to the US every year. We, you know, we have like drinking sessions there and so. But you know, this is a global team. So I also hired them. It's a combination of sales. The sales global sales team I have is very senior, you know, much more senior
adults than, in the room.
Yeah, but the technology came from the Philippines, from RTU, from UP. You know,
it's a good mix.
Imagine these kids can do. I mean, before, here's the comparison. Like when you go to Pag-asa and go to the other agencies, you know, of course they are scientists, right? I mean, I respect that. But now that these kids from RTU, for example, from UP, they know how to code.
Nice.
They're meteorologists. They also know Python. They know how to code.
Amazing.
So it's part of their curriculum now. So, I mean, imagine, we have a client, like a big, big client. They pay big. And then the system is done by, like, you know, by a 21 years old who just
did it. That's amazing with this that skill gap that, you know, even though they're 21, they're actually much more skilled with those people who are already been there for years and years before. So
yeah, and then they're exposed with data now. So before these meteorologists or scientists do it manually, like, you know, this data coming from bigger companies, like these kids can just play around with that, like, you know, create a product. Yeah. And I'm happy actually that, you know, we have this deal with RTU. So aside from hiring the people there, we also have an internship program.
Nice. So you build talent up.
Yep. And then just to start making Philippines also, you know, they have to be confident, you know, they have to be confident in terms of us Filipinos bringing in our expertise with natural disasters abroad, right? Mm-hmm. No one's doing that. And I think that also, sometimes it also breaks our heart that we didn't get any. I'm not dwelling in the past, but here's the thing, you know, as comunidad, we did it on our own. We did it with even the funding that we got. No one helped us, you know, no one helped us in terms of Philippines. And that's, you know, that's also part of the motivation that you do it independently. Like, you know, and then we are doing it on our own. We are hiring on our own before. And then we got the funding, so at least it can sustain. But before that, before the funding, I'm telling you, like, before the funding, I invested in that, because I know that, you know, you believe in something. You know, as founders, we believe in something, so we take the risk. And then secondary, you look for funding, you do the tedious due diligence process, and you know, you cry in the night, and then
exactly. All right, now let's take our last break, and when we come back, let's talk about how you actually got the funding after crying in the night. Let's talk about that more after the break.
Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup, because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes, all the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.eh payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey Hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor DragonPay is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, DragonPay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disburse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. DragonPay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit DragonPay is. DragonPay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2020. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to DragonPay.ph. That's DragonPay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust DragonPay.
And we're back from the break. We are still with Felix I.K. Hogan. Told us that he's been crying just like most startup founders who are in the valley of sorrow, you know, because it's never easy. And again, this is where people typically, this is where your mettle as a startup founder gets tested the most, when everything is literally, it feels like hand to mouth day to day operations. And then you have to plow through, do fundraising, do ops, and do everything else in between, right? And manage cash flow, which is fucking nerve-wracking. On your end, it's very impressive that your seed is $1 million.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I mean, this is the best time for Filipino founders, but I can just imagine how difficult it was to pitch this to VCs, where it's not the sexiest thing in the world. It's not the fintechs of the world right now. It's not the sexy what we're looking for in the world. Walk me through how difficult the fundraising for Comunidad is, especially at the start. And then later on, we'll talk about how you finally got over the hump and got the $1 million check.
Yeah.
How did you guys do it?
The difficulty is actually, you're right. For us, it's much more harder than the other founders, than the other startups, because
they can put you in a box. Typically, there's verticals, like, this is fintech, this is e-commerce, whatever.
Don't even have a category for now, you know.
Exactly.
But, now they're putting a category already, so.
Right.
I think it was really never easy for us. I mean, especially for me. I was in the phase of already, like, you know, building a product, a team, and then like juggling from operations to fundraising and cash flow. It's really hard. and especially you also have your personal life, right? You know,
yeah.
Your family, you have, you know, like all of those things. So it's all mixed up. A pandemic as well, right? You know, the pandemic and all those stuff. Mm-hmm. And for us, we did it during the pandemic. So it was double hard. And yeah, I think when we started pitching, actually, it's when we pitch, it's not like we got the funding already. It took us like 2 years, you know.
Years of fundraising.
Not really 2 years of fundraising. When we did the first fundraising, so it's like no one can understand what we're trying to pitch, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Understand. And then what I did was, okay, if I couldn't get any funding yet, then I'll just try to build my clients. So yep. I bootstrapped, and then, but our investor, actually, I have good relationships with them, regardless of they haven't really funded from the first time. So that one thing, here's one thing I love about our investors. So they help us, actually. So when I pitched, they help us to be scalable, to be the company that I am now. So it's not like they're in there for money. So they advised me along the way until after like a year they invested. So it's like, here's the thing. Most founders think that once they do fundraising, they can get money. It's really hard. For us, we have to show them. We have to prove that. So what the first pitch didn't work. So after the first pitch, I decided, okay, I'll get more customers. Yeah. You know, I'll show the traction. So really, we really work hard as a team. We bootstrap some money, and my team supported me in that. My team now, still the team before, that supported me during hard times. So,
right.
So sometimes it's true. Like, you know, the salaries are very hard to let. It's like you're in the Philippines, like isang kahig isang tuka.
Yes.
So that's your business model.
Right.
Business model. So
just don't die. That's it. Survive as much as you can.
If you feel bad, don't take medicine because it will cost you. You know, just isin mo na lang. So anyway, but you really have to make this work. So the good thing is we work hard as a team. We got a lot of customers, and then when the approach was, hey, I got back to the investors, and hey, we have traction already.
Nice.
And then after that, because I was able to close global deals. So
nice.
The investors invested in me, not on our idea, but on our business traction. So I showed them the business, the traction. So they invested. And then that's also the good thing, because if they invested early, okay. I have a very low valuation. But when I was able to give some traction, I was able to put a higher valuation in my company because of the numbers. You know, the investors, they just actually look at, especially for seed fund. And almost like 2 years before it really materialized.
Nice. That's amazing. And again, that's also the reality of fundraising. People think like, okay, I'll decide to fundraise. Some people are just blessed also to just like, okay, I'm going to fundraise. And a few months after, it's done. Right.
Yeah.
But for most of us, especially for grassroots, man, it's fucking hard. It is hard because, again, there's so many factors. It's not like, again, you don't, what I don't like hearing, and this is personally, is when people start feeling entitled that, hey, you know what? VCs don't freaking cut money here. Nobody owes a shit though. That's a harsh reality that we have to overcome and prove that we are worthy of investment, right? Because the money that people invest to startups, it's not also just money that just, you know, just came out of nowhere. Somebody worked hard for that. Now we want to be able to prove that even though we are grassroots, we can still earn that check and that valuation. That, again, congratulations for getting $1 million fucking dollars as seed round funding.
For us, really, it's I think for most startups, like AU, but for us, it's like we feel that we got it, but it's time to work hard. It's like it's not really like, hey, we got the $1 million, let's celebrate. For us, it's time to work hard, and
celebrate for a day. It's like yay, and then tomorrow back at it again, just like nothing.
But I think some of the kids now, they're very idealistic, but they really have to put the work. You know, the investors, even though they have a lot, we have a lot of investors now, their due diligence process, their process is still very tedious. VCs are very smart, you know. All of the people working at VCs are smart people. You cannot really like tell them like di mo sila pwede bulahin, you know. They know you're lying, they know you're telling the truth. Right. You have to show them the real numbers. And some of my friends like congratulating me. I told them, you know, I didn't work for like 3 months to just get this. You know, I tell them that, you know, it was really like a very
long process.
So, I think you know, if it's a very long process, it will make you more happier. You know, like, I mean,
yes, yeah, but it's worth it. You cherish it more.
And I don't know, as a startups naman, for me, I think you need to work on increasing talaga the market, yung revenue, and then of course, yung product market fit nga na sinasabi nila.
Correct.
You have to also look. Kaya nga, marami din kaming adjustments. So we did a lot of adjustments. Hindi nag-work dito. We have to change it. And then, pero ano talaga, very tiring. I mean, isipin mo from financial to IT to, you know, yung physical. Buti nga ngayon, nasa pandemic. I'm not saying that it's good, but we can work on just
sa laptop. You have to travel. Yeah.
Imagine before, you have to travel.
Right.
Yung mga clients namin nasa Myanmar, Bangladesh, India, like you have to travel pa pag ganun, so
right. It's crazy. But again, great stuff. But I want to understand now, with 1 million, what are you going to do with this? Because again, it's not like holy shit, we have 1 million, that money is yours. Nah. You need to use that as fuel to where you need to want to be in the next whatever. Yeah,
usually these millions of dollars is equivalent actually to certain milestones. Of course, when you're a startup, and for every startup, you really have to achieve those milestones in order for you to grow. For us, the good thing about Comunidad is we are already revenue generating. So the only thing that we're doing is how to increase that revenue. So we're building a product, a new platform will be launched by January. And then we're also expanding in because our current market is in Southeast Asia and South Asia, which is composed of like India, surrounding countries. But during this funding, we are also increasing in Africa and South America. So because the platform is scalable, so we're making it scalable because of the funding that we have. So it's pretty really work on the platform and work on capturing markets. So one thing I learned here is, you know, the investors that I have, well, actually our investors are Asia Development Bank, ADB Ventures.
So, shout out Toby Floro.
Toby, and then Wavemaker Partners. So the good thing about these investors that we have is they help us. You know, they help us realize how to set up the company properly, and to set up the company for global scaling. And they also help us in a lot of things. So I like these kinds of investors who doesn't just invest but also enable you to, you know, to become successful. And I think it's a win-win for us, for both actually the investors and us. And yeah, we're now really working, you know, to finish our stuff, platform and scaling. And we're hiring now, actually. We're doing hiring. We're doing hiring in India, in Cambodia. Our office, by the way, is in Singapore. That's our main office now. It's not here in the Philippines anymore. So, but we're hiring data science, meteorologists, which is when you post at LinkedIn, no one applies.
What is this? Is this the one that reads horoscope? Is this a horoscope company? Right.
Yeah, we're very willing to. We're actually now, you know, reaching out to government to partner. Actually, we're talking in to Pag-asa. We have these cute sensors now. But you know, like we're just doing a lot of you know, like what you call these pilot projects. We're doing a pilot projects, and that's the $1 million is there are two things. It's a good thing, but second is you have to take that responsibility as a founder. to really work hard.
That's amazing.
As you can see, the journey is very challenging. It's like, you know, if you're like, you're watching NBA, right? So you work hard, college, then you got drafted to the NBA, right? So that's the time you just started working, right?
Yep. For us, whole new grind again.
Yeah, for us, we just feel that we just got drafted, like not really on the first round, maybe maybe third round pick, but we have to prove that, you know, we are we can be the all-star, like, you know, something like that. So
and it's amazing, but because one thing that what I love about what you guys are doing is, again, built in the Philippines, but made for the world. And
yes,
that's a rarity. And that's why I want to commend you guys. Like, most Filipino startups, especially us grassroots people, you need to think like that. Because if you're only just solving problems in our backyard, if you're ever gonna get significant funding, unless you do it like Kumu, who's just doing a fucking amazing job, right? If you need to get that type of traction too, you have to build it for the world, and you have to have that global scale mentality. Now, I want to understand this, Felix, before I let you go. And let's pay it forward to those founders, because a lot of them, myself included, can get weathered through that long valley of doing hand to mouth while you're raising, while you're just trying to survive, right? When you're cockroach mode, you know, you're just not going to go away, and you show grit. But what's your advice for founders who are in the thick of it, where you were a few months ago, where you barely had anything, you had to survive, you don't have that funding yet? What would be your advice for them to survive or to walk to the end of the tunnel?
Yeah, I think my advice first is, first, they have to take it very seriously. It's like raising a kid, like, you know, for every small detail. Second is, you also have to reassess everything. I mean, what's you know, working wrong? What do I have to adjust? And third one is just, you know, look at the facts. Like, do I still have money? Do I still have, you know, how much money do I, you know, like, can I bootstrap? Or what do I need to do? So, I mean, it's like having a blue, like a plan. Imagine all the options possible. Because you are, like, you know, you're falling down the cliff already, right? So you really have to think quickly. So that's where you can assess that you're ready for this, you know, that you're ready for these kinds of, that's because there's also founders I know that already gave up, like, you know, shit, I can't really do this. It's affecting my finances, my family. Yeah. So it depends on how really want it bad. But I think more on just proper assessment and listen to the experts, to the people that can help you. Find advices like how can I manage this, you know. And if you really believe in your product, you know, and then if you think that you're really solving a problem that can scale globally, I think you have the right recipe. But if you are, for example, like in a certain industry, like, for example, like Kumu, what you mentioned, if I'm gonna make another Kumu, it's very hard for me to, you know, to really convince investors. So I have to find that niche too. The good thing about me is my niche is my past work. My work was a niche already. So I like something like that. So yeah, it's just really, you know, hustle, how hard you want the grind to be. If you are taking that, you know, risk, then you're gonna be, you know, you're gonna be all good.
Correct. And you can't be an anti-hustler, because there's this movement now. I don't know if you've ever heard it. This year, I came across it, that there's this anti-hustle movement of 2020. I was like, dude, if you're a startup founder, that's the worst thing you can take.
Yeah.
Because we work 24/7. And we work for survival, and we work for the teams and the problem that we're trying to, and our dreams as well. Right? And you can't, the only way you're even going to get, and there's no guarantees, because even if you work hard, there's still a big possibility that you're going to fail. But if you want to give yourself a fighting chance to even get that thing that you're wanting to get, whether it's funding, whether it's revenue or a product, the only way you're going to get there is through hustle.
Yeah, it's like, here's my perfect example. And I think this is not a, it's not a good description in a way, like, but this is a perfect example for me. So if you have like aneurysm, right, you cannot go high blood rate. So you have exactly. to monitor your high blood rate, because if you get into this like high blood rate, then your veins might explode, right?
Might pop, yeah.
You have to put a lot of monitors in your body. You have to take medicines, everything. So you have to work 24/7 in order for your body to, you know, not to affect that aneurysm. So that's what it takes. You know, it's like you have to be OC, you have to be anxious. You know, that's how it takes. It's 24/7 monitoring, like all aspects from your employees, from the sales, from you know. So that's how it is. And if they see founders usually sometimes speaking in speaking engagements, actually they're thinking about something else.
Yes. I'm like, I'm thinking like, who's the investor here? I'm looking at the room. Like, yes. Who can I close here? Right? Whatever.
It's like you're continuously hunting and continuously trying to improve. So yeah, that's how we are. And then yep. That's the recipe actually to make it work. And for now, we as Comunidad, we don't see ourselves as a successful startup. We see ourselves as just having a good start. Just having a good start. And but there's still a lot of work to be done. And we're happy that we got the support from the global community, the global investors.
Yep.
We tried to pitch in with Filipino investors, but we didn't get any chance to be considered. But we're happy that we were accepted in a global way. The valuations globally are bigger than what Filipino investors evaluate your company. I'm not saying bad to the Filipino.
No, and that's true. I absolutely agree. You can't use the Filipino discount. But why you need to have a global perspective.
Yeah. So yeah, so that's what usually when global investors reach out to you, they give you a reasonable valuation. But there are some Filipino investors who gives you really bad valuation. It's like getting, I think, around, I heard from some news, getting like 30%, but
40% discount. Yeah, I've heard of that too. But again, that's their job. They're trying to get their best deal, of course, right? So that's why as a founder, you need to know how to stand your ground and how to negotiate. With the
and that's
valuation.
Also one challenge, the negotiation. For me, I'm not a good negotiator, actually. And it's really hard to face these experts, like these VCs, when you're not really, that type of person. So the negotiation part is also something that you have to learn, and then you have to really know what the value of your business is. And based on facts, actually, and also your projects. So yeah, I mean, as you can see, there's a lot of stuff, and I think every founder is also encountering the same
correct
same thing.
Yeah, and my last thing there is that ask for advice from people that have been there, and the best people that can actually help you out are founders as well, just like Felix, who is here now. Last question, Felix, before I let you go, what's the best advice you've gotten over this period of being, again, IT with a IT guy to being a full-fledged founder who's actually raised $1 million. If you can just remember, what's the best advice that was given to you?
That's a good question, because actually 2 days ago, that was just actually we were like discussing that part. So for me, everyone's telling me that I have to be firm. Firm in terms of, let's say if you want to fire someone because people are not doing the work, you really have to be firm. You have to forget these emotional factors that affect us. Yeah. Like, as Filipinos, we're emotional. For example, if you are partnered with your friend in a startup, the only reason why you're not firing him because you are his friend, but he's not doing the work. You cannot find him for 2 months. You don't know where they are, those kinds of things. So, if these people are not doing their job, you really have to learn to, to stand your ground. And second is you really have to make, you have to learn to say no. I think that for me, you need to learn how to say no. And at the same time, you really have to be firm with your decision. for the sake of the company. You have to forget the other aspect. You have to separate your personal life to personal decisions, and don't combine it from because what's happening now is there's a lot of founders who are friends and suddenly things get mixed up. Because for me, it's basing on my real experience. Yeah. And if I didn't fire a lot of people, not really a lot of people, but some of the partners before I, you know, it will not.
You wouldn't even get here.
Yeah. So, ano siya, madugo siyang process in terms of people. And you really have to have a fit team. I mean, the team that would fit the vision, right? So, right. If the team is not performing, you have to, That is a very hard thing for Filipinos, actually. Especially if you know someone and then you fire them, you know. It's like you have to be straightforward. You have to just tell them what you really want. And then that will take time to learn. For me, that's the most thing that I'm working on, you know.
No, it's true. Because again, as values, as Filipino founders, there's utang na loob, there's pakisama in the way. But, you know, at the end of the day, more than yourself, more than anybody else, business or the startup comes first. Again, Felix, thank you very much for being on Hustle Shard. But before I let you go, maybe there are people who want to use your data or your product. Please invite people over to check out Comunidad. And if they want to reach you, how do they do that and where do they go?
Oh, yeah. Well, you can reach out. Our website is comunidad.co. So you can see there how, what are industries that we tap, our clients. And you can just search me by LinkedIn, Felix Aike. I always reply to the messages, even, you know.
Just like I did, randomly.
I always reply to the message, even if someone's selling me, I told them, we have a different product already. I mean, I always, not really 100% reply, but I always try to reply. I feel that replying is a good gesture and be professional. If you have time, they can find me comunidad.co. They can find me at LinkedIn, Felix Aike, and I'll be having some also discussions. Speaking engagements with the Philippine Startup Summit.
Nice.
We have a Smart City Summit, Flood Summit. So. All the things that I mentioned to Ron about, how these data, I will graphically show to everyone how to do it, so that it can save also a lot of people in, let's say, it depends on where you are. So, you know, these kinds of things. I'm happy. Thank you, Ron, for it's rare that I do these podcasts and I like the style of the podcast. And
thank you.
I like your website, by the way. So it's very minimal and very modern. And,
thank you. It's the Gen Z in us. Remember, we are the Gen Z.
Thank you. It's an honor also for me to participate. And thank you for choosing me.
No, man. Well deserved. And congratulations once again. And we are rooting for you, the whole Startup PH ecosystem. For sure, after hearing this, we'll be rooting for you. But before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any of your favorite podcast app. We're probably there. And if we did say some jargon, don't worry, it's going to be the show notes on hustleshare.com. And lastly, if you want to be part of the other hustlers that hustle with us, it's going to be the Hustle Share community on Facebook. Again, Felix, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Ron. And have a nice day and stay safe always. So things are getting better with COVID. So next year would be great.
All right. Thanks again. I'll see you too. And I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.